And you're listening to the Mighty 90.1 FM, KPFT, Houston.
Good evening, Houston. This is Ron Gagne with Voices at Work.
And co-host Tim Pagel.
Welcome to our new time slot, every Friday from 8 until 9. Finally happened. It took a little bit, but we're finally here. Feels pretty good.
We've done three shows, pilot programs, and now we've got one that's going to come on every week. So we have a chance here to do some interesting stories and carry them from week to week and get some ideas from you listening out there on topics and of interest to you and work related.
We have going to have Morty Simon and Carol Oppenheimer on a little bit later in the show. Right now, I'd like to get ready to go to our first song. Being that it is Father's Day coming up and my father recently passed, he started out as a newspaper boy, and the only thing I could find that was close to it is off the soundtrack of Newsies. It's off of soundtrack, and it's The World Will Know. Hope you enjoy it.
Pull a Dernhurst, they think we're nothing. Are we nothing?
No!
Dernhurst, they think they got us. Do they got us?
No!
Even though we ain't got hats or badges, we're a union just by saying so. And the world will know. What's it gonna take to stop the wagons? Are we ready?
Yeah!
What's it gonna take to stop the scabbers? Can we do it?
Yeah!
We'll do what we gotta do until we break the will of mighty Bill and Joe. But the Lancies come out swinging. Will we hear it?
No! We've got 100 voices singing. Who can hear a lousy whistle blow? And the world will know that this ain't no game. That we got a ton of rotten fruit and poisoning games. So they gave their word, but it ain't worth being. And it's gonna see what shots of
okay, that was off the soundtrack, Newsies, from the movie. If you haven't seen the movie, it's a musical, obviously, but it's a good movie. It came out about 10 years ago, and it's based on a true story. In 1899, the big newspapers decided they needed more money, and they tried to get it off the lowest people on the totem pole, the Newsies, and the Newsies said no. not playing that. So if you haven't seen the movie, give it a watch. Like I stated at the very beginning, my father was started out as a newspaper boy. He didn't intend to stay in the newspaper business, but he did. His real dream was to be a teacher, and more specifically a history teacher. But what often happens to working class folks is it just didn't happen. Like I say, with Father's Day right around the corner, I just wanted to honor my father a little bit, and in the process honor all the working fathers out there, and make sure that we don't forget what they've done for us. Going to a little bit of current events. Coming up on July 29th, the PACE Local 4-1, is going to be having a Future of Labor Conference, a youth leadership training. And I know they did this last year, and they had a lot of success with it. It's basically for high school-age youth to prepare them for the world of work. And they'll be answering questions on workplace rights, employment laws, and other issues. And like I say, they had a lot of success last year with it, and hopefully they'll have some more success with this one. And you'll be hearing more about that. It's coming at the end of July, so we'll definitely get you some more information on that.
You got any more current events?
Oh, yeah, we got plenty of current events. On June 28th, the Justice Bus is going to roll again in Houston.
That's right.
And I've ridden on that the past couple of years, and I've always had a great time. What we do is basically go around to employers that have harassed and intimidated their workers and held up signs saying there's no justice here, that the employers are fighting their employees, just to get it out there to the public. And we also go to make a couple of stops to honor those companies that do treat their workers properly. So if you have a mind to riding the Justice Bus on the 28th from, I believe it's 8:30 until 5:30, give the Central Labor Council a call, and they'll hook you up with a seat on the bus.
I haven't seen that schedule, but I'm just curious if maybe the Baker Concrete here, that they've had some problems, that they won their election over there, and the company has agreed to bargain with the union, but hear now that they're challenging that in court, the election, and they're not going to honor that agreement to bargain with them and give them a contract. So I don't know, would that be one of the places that they might stop and visit?
There's a very good chance of that. I have heard some talk about that, and yes, that probably will be a stop. Like Tim was saying, the CEO agreed to the election. He said that, you know, let the workers decide, and he'll go with it. Well, the workers did decide, and they wanted the union to come in, and now they're appealing the NLRB decisions as a stall tactic.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, we're going to let those people out there know that they're part of a bigger family.
Yeah. Well, I didn't realize this. I've never heard of Baker Concrete, and then I was reading the last couple of days that they're involved with, I believe, the new football stadium, and I think the new sports arena for the basketball team here in town, and some other large municipal construction projects that are going on here. So I didn't have any idea who, you know, what Baker Concrete, what are they building, homes or in, you know, what type of buildings that they were putting up, but they're doing some large-scale construction here in the city.
It takes a lot of concrete to build those massive structures that, of course, we as workers are paying for, because the companies that slap their name on it aren't the ones footing the bill. Mm-hmm. For that. But, yeah, and, you know, so if you're interested in riding the Justice Bus, if you will call 713-923-9474, that's the number for the Central Labor Council, and they'll give you a scoop on reserving a seat on that bus.
And also, I guess it'd be a good time that if your company is one of those that is taking care of you, and you'd like the Justice Bus to stop by and honor your employer, call them as well, huh?
Right, yeah, they are taking requests, basically. There's unfortunately, there's no shortage of stops, but we like to try and make the stops that will mean the most. Uh-huh. So definitely give them a call, one way or the other, whether it's a good employer or a bad one.
Okay.
And let them know, you know, why you think that should be on the agenda, and we'll see what can happen with it.
Well, before you go on any further, what I guess mentioned, it's 713-526-5738 that we will be taking some calls, and maybe if you have some ideas or want to recommend where we need to stop, then give us a call.
Yeah, I think we have Josh Darr on the line. Let's see if we can get him. Josh, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Hello, Josh.
Hey, Tim, what's up?
Everything's okay on this end. You?
Yeah, doing good. My cell phone just went dead, so I called back on a landline.
Okay.
We're all set.
Well, Josh Darr is the organizer at the Sheet Metal Workers Union. You folks might remember from our last show that there was a campaign, organizing campaign going on at Mitsubishi Caterpillar Forklift Division here in Houston. And Josh, I know you're going to correct me, but I'm just going to go ahead and say, I'll just let you fill us in with the information. I think there was about 400 to 500 employees out there that y'all were working with. And go ahead and tell us the good news and tell us what's up.
Okay. It's a 435-person bargaining unit. And on May 9th, we had our election, and we won it 210 yes to 198.
Okay.
So where we're at in that right now is on July or June 4th, we received a letter from the vice president of Mitsubishi of Human Resources stating that they recognized their obligation to bargain with the sheet metal workers. So it appears that before too long, we're going to be entering into preliminary negotiations.
Well, great.
Fantastic.
So,
well, hopefully we can stop by there and welcome all those new union members to the union family.
Yeah. And, yeah, definitely.
So, yeah, good work, man. Congratulations. That's
does it
awesome.
Look like that they're really just going to go along with work with you on this, or is it...
Well, there's a... Inside the plant, they're in kind of that weird position between winning their election, but they haven't gotten their first contract yet.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're kind of like that in limbo of, you know, what's going to change as far as now that they have that they formed their union.
Right.
And there's been some management going through an adjustment period and some workers going through an adjustment period. But, yeah, like I said, they've... You know, sent us a letter stating, you know, requesting a preliminary meeting to discuss the ground rules.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to send out our lead negotiator, J.C. Hart, and we're going to go from there. So
what?
On, let's see, June 2nd, we had one of the first real meetings with the workers, and they went ahead and elected their negotiating committee from amongst themselves.
Okay.
So we've gotten some of that knocked out of the way. We've been sending out surveys to all the workers to get their issues of what it is that they want to negotiate for.
Mm-hmm. And what are a couple of those issues?
More than anything, what we heard from most of the workers was just respect. They're in a position to where they're being pushed harder and harder to produce more and more in, you know, less time.
Mm-hmm.
And they just want to be able to go to work and produce to the best of their ability and go home and feel good about it. Mm-hmm. And not have somebody standing over them the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just harping and screaming at them.
Right.
So a few other things, you know, there seems to be a lot of people with hand injuries, and so we're going to look at some safety issues. You know, definitely the pay and benefits, which always comes into effect.
Mm-hmm.
So, but that's some of the main stuff.
Okay.
But you got some of the groundwork started, and you can actually start building something.
Right, definitely.
Fantastic.
Yeah, we're... you know, we're starting to work with some of the workers to give them a bit better understanding of what it means now that they've organized a union.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of them are still coming to us. You know, the ones that haven't really been involved in the campaign up until this point, and they realize now they have a union. Well, now they want to keep coming to us and say, well, when are you guys coming in? And so we're trying to educate them that we're not coming in. This is your union.
Right.
You know, we're walking you guys through the process, but it's up to you guys to run and operate your own union.
Right.
Yeah, and I think that's something that is extremely important. That's the difference between the service and the organizing model of a union. And the organizing model has a lot more power. Pardon me. Has a lot more power, and, you know, it's a tool.
Right.
It's a tool that can be used to build something, and it takes work. You know, that's what a lot of people don't understand is, you know, you got to put some time into it. Anything
right.
worth having is worth working for.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I heard you guys made one little comment at the beginning I feel I need to correct you on, when you said I was the organizer over there.
Uh-oh. I think we just lost Josh. Sorry, Josh. if you're listening, we do apologize for that. But, you know, technical glitches happen. So, while we try to recover from that, you know, we're just
I think he was trying to say that he was not the organizer over there. I'm not sure...
what he is.
Well, I know he is the... I don't know if he's the chief organizer. I know he was working with the campaign.
Right.
I wanted to ask him... I forget what the number is. It was 198 to 210.
Right.
And I'd be curious to know what's the thoughts or what's going on with the 198, the folks that voted against it. Now that they've succeeded to get a union to bargain for them, what the thoughts are of these ones that voted against it.
Okay, looks like we have Josh back. Let's see if we got him.
You there?
Is that you, Josh?
Hello?
Yeah.
Okay.
Lost you.
Yeah, I don't know what happened.
Whoops.
Okay, correct me, Josh.
Okay, let's see. We had Linda Morales, who was the lead organizer, and then there's myself and three others, John Paul Zepeda, Deborah Parker, and Min Man Nguyen.
Okay.
And the five of us make up the Sheet Metal Workers Houston Project.
Okay.
And it took all five of us plus five more international organizers to pull this campaign off.
Okay.
So
you're not the head domino.
Right, right.
Okay.
Now that would be Linda Morales.
Okay. It takes a lot of Indians to do anything, you know.
Definitely. And it took every one of us to do this one.
Yeah, well, and you were facing a pretty massive union busting campaign out there, weren't you? Forced captive audience meetings and whatnot?
Right, yeah, definitely. They were giving them, you know, various leaflets and stuff on pretty much a daily basis. They had a few large group meetings, but mainly they were using the department meetings and having supervisors try to, you know, talk to people in small groups. And right at the very end, just the day before, the day before the election, after, you know, telling them everything about how bad the union was and we're going to force them out on strikes and all kinds of bad stuff like that, they broke down and did the... Please give us another chance. Actually ask for one more year to make everything better. We promise we'll do it.
Now this is the actually third attempt that they've tried to organize out there, correct? Wasn't it the UAW tried twice before that?
Yeah, the UAW had actually gone through two elections and then had a third campaign that just didn't it basically just kind of fizzled out. And actually, with us, when I first came onto this campaign in February, we were at the point that we were about to pull out because, you know, we just weren't getting the support from the inside. And we just went to these guys and said, look, you know, you guys, if we can get 60 authorization cards out of you guys, we can file for an election. And other than that, you know, there's nothing we can do. We've done as much as we can do. And within a period of about 3 weeks, those guys brought us 100 cards.
Oh, cool.
So...
Well, Josh, we appreciate you giving us a call and an update. We're going to move on. We've got our other guest on the line. And keep up the good work, brother.
Okay. All right.
Take care.
Take it easy.
All right.
Bye.
Okay. We're going to go to Morty and Carol. Let's see. Both of them have represented many different unions, the AFSCME. The Hospital Workers Union, USWA, which I believe is the steel workers, the carpenters. They've also both taught labor law. Morty taught at the University of New Mexico, and Carol taught at University of Austin. University of Texas at Austin. So, Morty, are you there?
Yeah.
All right. Good.
I'm
to
here too, Ron.
Yay! I got you both.
Yeah.
Good to
Two
talk
for
to you.
One.
Beautiful, beautiful. Good to talk to you again.
Good to talk to you.
So, I first met the two of them at the Workers' Rights workshop. Was it last September?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. The class really had a big impression on me. It taught me a lot, and what I really liked about the class was a lot of these anti-union campaigns focus on, well, if we don't give you what you want, all you can do is strike, and then you're out of a paycheck. And one of the things that, the class taught was, no, we have a lot more options than that. And strike is a last resort, and we can do all kinds of things up to that, including getting community support and things like that. So I'd like to thank you for that.
It was great having you in the class, Ron. You added a lot to it.
Oh, I'm just loud in class, that's all.
No, you're very good in class.
But, yeah, so tell me a little bit about your experience with these representing these different unions and what you've come to learn and things like that.
You go first, Mort.
Okay, well, most, you know, I think that being a lawyer for a union is a sort of a odd position to be in, because people come to the lawyer and say, we have a problem and we want you to solve it through the law. And often that's not the best way to do it. I mean, sometimes it's unavoidable, and you have to do it that way. But it sort of undercuts the role of relying on your membership and organizing in a difficult situation. And so a lot of times when we practice law, we are struck at how the law really disempowers union people. It sort of teaches them to be passive and to sort of wait for the outcome of whatever the case is.
Put the ball in somebody else's court.
Yeah, right.
And particularly because the law is, if you have to go through any type of legal proceeding, you know that it takes a very long time. And what that does is you might have a great campaign going and a lot of people active and concerned about an issue, but by the time it goes through any type of legal action, all of that enthusiasm and the power of the workers has been burned out, just waiting for some kind of result. So that's another reason why the law, it can be a good tool, but it's not at all something you want to rely on.
Well, because actually, when you sign that union card, I mean, you're authorizing that union representative, regardless of the trade, to act as your legal bargaining representative. So I mean, you give up your rights, but you're putting all your interests into their hands, and a lot of times what they do is not necessarily what you'd like them to do. Is that correct?
That can happen, but I think that the big problem, even in that case, when you sign the card, I think what we like to think is you're not giving up your power, that you're agreeing to be part of a larger organization that's going to work collectively to try to make the workplace better, whether it's getting higher pay or dealing with a health and safety problem on the job. That's, I think, what I would call an old-fashioned view of unionism, which is when you sign the card, you give power over to the union, because the union is us. It's all of us. And so it's then a matter of participating, or management's still going to beat us down. It still requires that people be organized and strong. And sometimes the law becomes a false promise of power, which is really misleading and doesn't really get anyone anywhere.
Right. I don't know if you heard the previous conversation we had with Josh Starr, the organizer here in town.
Heard a little at the end.
Well, he was commenting about how now that they've won the election out there, they've got some employees that are like, okay, we've won, what are you going to do for us? And I think that's kind of a classic example of what happens when you have an election and you get a union, that the workers tend to sit back and expect to, okay, I'll pay some dues, but now you got to go out and perform for me. What are you going to do for me?
Right.
That was actually brought up in that class as the service model versus the organizing model.
Exactly.
And, man, I wish I would have brought that article from that workbook, because I think it really illustrates the point.
Left your homework at home?
Yeah, basically.
Well, you know, I don't know who is speaking, who just spoke.
This is Tim Pagel. I'm sorry. Tim Pagel speaking here.
I should have introduced you. I'm sorry. This is Tim Pagel, my co-host.
Okay. Well, you know, I forgot about this, but the article you're talking about, the servicing and the organizing model, was written by a woman named Teresa Conroe, who is going to be teaching in Houston at the end of September and early October. She's going to be teaching an organizing class that is for both new workplaces, but I'm sure she's going to deal also with organizing and mobilizing people that are already in organized workplaces.
Okay. Fantastic. And that's another thing that you brought up in the differentiating between the service and the organizing model is the organizing model doesn't mean that, okay, now you voted the union in, you're a union shop, you stop organizing. You continue to organize. You never stop organizing.
Right, and unless in the unlikely event that the employer gives you everything you want.
Yeah,
but even,
right.
Even then, I mean, there are community issues. There are all kinds of issues that unions can have a very positive role in if they continue to organize around basically injustice. I mean, if you think of the union movement as basically a justice movement for working people, we certainly have no shortage of injustices to working people, particularly with the administration in Washington.
I think we have a long way to go before any employer that any of us knows is going to give anybody everything we want. So there's never going to be a time when we're not going to need to be strong and organized.
Yeah. Well, we're going to try and get some callers here, and in the next 10 minutes or so, see if people have questions. I realize you don't practice law now, but maybe if you can give general answers. If anybody out there has any questions for them, you can give us a call at 713-526-5738. That's 713-526-KPFT, and we'll see if we can get you some answers. But while we wait for that, tell me more about the Southwest Organizing School.
Thought you'd never ask. The Southwest Organizing School Carol and I work with is the project of the George Meany Center for Labor Studies, the National Labor College, which is the AFL-CIO's national college, and it's an accredited college where you can go and get a bachelor's degree in labor studies, and people who aren't interested in a degree can go and learn about arbitration, negotiation, and other, you know, areas related to both to law and to the culture, union culture, and film, and so we're pretty excited to be a part of it. The Southwest Organizing School sponsors the National Labor College's classes in the Southwest, and they're open to all union members, you know, around the area. We actually have some classes scheduled in Texas in September, and in Dallas we're going to do a class on arbitration, how to do hearings and arbitration for union people, and that's September 22nd to the 26th, and that's going to be at the IBW Hall in Dallas. Then the weekend of the 27th and the 28th of September, there's a class called How to Work with the Media, and that was your idea, Ron, and we followed up on it, and we're teaching the class, Carol and I, the arbitration class, but Teresa Conroe and Glenn Scott, who's from Austin, Teresa's a labor educator out of Los Angeles, will be teaching the media class. That's in Houston, and I think that's also going to be at your union hall, Ron, right? I think that's correct.
Yeah, we're trying to make it happen, trying to see if the schedules work, and hopefully that will be at the IBW Local 716 Union Hall.
Great.
Not guaranteed yet, though.
Okay. And then September 29th to October 3rd is going to be an organizing class taught by Teresa Conroe in Houston, and we hope that will also be at your union hall. And these are open to all union members, at $330 for the arbitration and the organizing class, and $175 for the media class. And you register through the George Meany Center for Labor Studies in Silver Spring, Maryland. Karen Banks is the name of the person there, and her number is 301-431-5422. If you want to read about any of this, get on our website. It's georgemeany.org. And for the Southwest Organizing School, you click on What's New, and it'll show you the schedule of the Southwest Organizing School all through 2002, and including Texas. And we'll have some classes in December in New Mexico.
Well, one other thing about the classes, Ron, is that you can take those classes for credit toward your bachelor's degree in labor studies through the National Labor College. And even if you haven't yet enrolled, it would still count for college credit if you enroll in the next couple of years. So it gives you an extra benefit for no extra money.
Fantastic. Yeah, as you may know, I'm interested in enrolling in the classes and in the program, and I went to Phoenix for the educational planning class, and
Pinky,
that's right. Diane Pinky taught that class, and she asked a question that really impacted my life. She asked me, and asked the whole class at the end of one of the days, and we're supposed to come back next day with the answer, but the question was to the effect of, how and why did you become a union person? Not a union member, but a union person. And I thought about that question that whole night. And it, at the time, my father had cancer, and we were fighting that. But it also, it brought up a lot as far as how I became the person I am, the what I consider important, you know, as opposed to what the world thinks is important. And, you know, it kind of tied that in for me. And, you know, it gave me the opportunity to realize these things and also to talk to my father about him before he went. You know, because he didn't realize the impact that he had on me. Just, you know, it wasn't that he sat me down and said, okay, learn this, you know, okay, care about people. You know, it's just that the way he lived his life, you know, he was always a working man, working nights to make a little extra to pay the bills. And, you know, the whole time growing up, he was writing $5 and $10 checks, you know, to the March of Dimes and Feed the Children and all those organizations. And of course, with Father's Day right around the corner, I'm getting ready to go to a song while we wait for some callers. And this song is, it's not necessarily a labor song, but being at Father's Day and I want to honor my father, it's called Things We've Handed Down. And those are some of the things that my father handed down to me. And hopefully when people listen to it, they will think about what was handed down to them from their father, what they are now handing down to their children. And even if you look at it from a wider aspect, what is I as a more mature worker or journeyman wireman teaching, handing down to my apprentice or my new coworker? Are we handing down the values of justice for all? Are we handing down the union workers tend to be more 8 for 8? I earn my money, you know, nobody gives it to me. But we need to hand these down to the next generation. And we need to honor those that do that handing down. So right now we're going to go to the song. It's by Mark Cohen, The Things Handed Down.
Down and curl. Will you be mama's boy, dad? lost along the way. Maybe you can help me find her in the things you do and say. And these things we've given you, they are not so easily found. Later for the things we've handed down, the things we've handed down, 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 down. You may not always be so grateful for the way you were made. Maybe some feature of your father's that you'd gladly sell or trade. And one day you may look at us and say that you were cursed. But over time that line has been extremely well rehearsed by our fathers and their fathers, some old and distant town.
Okay, that was Things We've Handed Down by Mark Cohen. Sorry to get sentimental on you guys, but...
That was beautiful.
It is Father's Day coming around the corner.
Yeah,
so.
We're sorry to hear about your dad, too, Ron. That's really tough.
He was a great man, and not the way the world measures greatness and money and power, but with generosity and compassion, he was just the best. And, you know, I'm sorry that you didn't get a chance to meet him.
Yeah, I am, too.
Yeah.
But let me give out that number one more time. We've got some people on hold we'll get to in just one second. 713-526-5738. That's 713-526-KPFT. Morty and Carol will try to field your questions. If not, I'll jump in and save them. So let's see. We've got Ron on line one. Hello, Ron. You there?
Yes, sir.
All right.
I live right next to two very large landscaping companies. And their workers, pardon me, do you think they're getting a fair shake? Their workers, you know, mowing lawns and planting trees and flowers and stuff. Do you think they're getting a fair shake? I don't think so. I think they're being abused.
Oh, there's a good chance of it.
Absolutely. If they get hard on a job, tough shit, man. You're out of here.
Watch your language, please, brother. We are on the air.
All right.
And a lot of these people may be day laborers, and I know the AFL-CIO, in conjunction with the Metropolitan Organization and the Interfaith Council, has stepped in and is trying to improve that situation.
Yeah.
The problem was a lot of these people weren't getting paid. People would come by, pick them up, and hire them.
Absolutely.
And they promised
they're
to pay them
victimized.
At the end of the week. Yeah, and with the Oscar Romero Center, the guys can come up out of the street, and not be stopping traffic and getting in trucks. They've set a minimum wage, and they're learning how to defend themselves as far as how to make sure they get that check.
So
that they can spread the word, hey, if this guy tries to hire you, don't go. He hasn't paid the last five people. There are some things out there where people are trying to help, but, of course, there's always a lack of volunteers.
Where's that situation?
Yeah, what would you say about that, Morty, Carol?
Well, one thing, it sounds like it's great that there is that center, because one of the problems, particularly if people are immigrants, they may not have any protections unless there are community groups and unions religious groups that go to bat for them and make sure that they have protection, that they get paid, and that they're not working in dangerous conditions with, you know, like pesticides without adequate protection, or moving equipment that may not be protected. So it's really important, and it's great to hear that there is like a worker center, which is what it sounds like, that is going to bat for folks like that, because we have to help each other out. Anybody, you know the old saying, an injury to one is an injury to all, and that's true. Every worker that is treated unfairly, it doesn't just hurt that one worker, but it hurts all of us. And it's great to hear that's going on in Houston.
I saw a guy driving a Bobcat dumper, and he had a guy in the shovel.
That's something.
I tell you, both landscapers, if you don't hear it.
Well, see, the thing is, that's something that you can get away with 100 times and get away with it, but
bucket got his leg or foot cut off, what's he going to get? Nothing.
Oh, right.
We'll just hire somebody else.
I'd like to just jump in here on this for a second. When you ask, do you think that they're being exploited and abused, I think it's obvious that they are.
Absolutely.
But remember that the conditions that a lot of our immigrants come from, I don't think the majority of people can understand that. So in one sense, they are doing pretty good, but on the other hand, they're being exploited, and their good job that they have today, if they get hurt, they're just dispensed with automatically. So,
right.
I mean,
sadly enough,
because these people are hardworking people, and they'll gladly do a good job.
They're honest and straightforward.
Yeah, but
I think they're getting, being shafted.
Well,
have you talked to them?
Some of them.
You might let them know that...
They don't want to talk to me.
Well, they might...
I mean, you're going to be a union. What's that, man? You're going to get me in trouble, man? I get fired and I have to be deported back to Mexico or Guatemala or El Salvador, and I'll get killed down there.
Well, that's part of the problem with...
It's sad.
Oh, yeah, it definitely is. That's one of the problems with the way our system works here, especially with the recent Supreme Court ruling saying that...
They're not protected.
Well,
yeah, that they can.
Yeah, if I told them that.
Hello.
Uh oh.
I lost him. But yeah, he does bring up a good issue of the fact that these people do have very little choice in some instances, and it's really the unions and the community groups that have to step in for these people and argue on their behalf, and that's why like you were saying earlier, Carol, helping them does help us. It's just like the minimum wage. Well, the whole reason why the minimum wage was instituted was because during the Depression, you get more and more people out of work. People are, when you've got nothing, a dollar sounds like a lot.
Right.
And
people were working for a dollar.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And at one point, they just had to say no.
Yeah.
If you're going to work, you need to make enough to, minimum wage isn't enough to earn a living, for sure.
We have, I don't know if you have this in Houston, we just passed in Santa Fe, where we live, a living wage, which is higher than the minimum wage.
Congratulations to you.
Yeah.
We're very proud, and it doesn't cover enough people yet, but that's another way to provide protection to the people that work for the landscapers and others that are not getting any health benefits, no pension, no training, no nothing, to set a higher level so that at least people can live on the pay that they get.
Right.
There's another thing that's been a good trend in the last few years is the kind of thing that's going on in Harris County and probably under your leadership of your Central Labor Council, where you have workers' centers and community groups that service immigrants working with organized labor, so that there's some trust built up, in the immigrant community, that unions will, just like the caller had said, Ron, they say, well, you're going to get me in trouble, and they don't yet trust that the labor movement can help them, and so it's a good sign, a good trend, and the one to be encouraged that workers' centers and immigrant rights groups and labor working together and trusting each other and trying to protect the rights of the weakest people in the society.
Oh, certainly. And I would like to mention that we are going to be starting a living wage campaign here in the Houston area. I know Acorn is working on that, and hopefully I'll have somebody here in the next couple of months to interview him on it. But yeah, hopefully we'll be able to get that passed here as well.
Well, and the other thing, it sort of goes back to our earlier discussion. You can get a great law in the books, but if people aren't continuing to be organized and pressure to make sure that that law is enforced, it's not worth much. So it's great that you all have a campaign going, and even now that we have this law passed, the harder work now is to make sure it really protects people.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And I just want to say that caller is still out there and he's listening, and any others, when it comes to immigrant workers, don't sell them short. A lot of these folks, especially in Mexico, they have unions in Mexico, and they're faced with the same struggles that we are here. They come over here, and yeah, they're scared, and they don't want to lose their job, and they don't want to get hurt. But sometimes it you know, you can just reach out and talk to them, and they're receptive to looking out for themselves, and if you approach them that way. So they're not all afraid to talk to you about joining the union or doing things to protect them on their job.
Right, and there are a couple of unions, the hospital and restaurant employees, and also SEIU, that mm-hmm. are organizing large groups of immigrants, particularly in cities like Los Angeles,
mm-hmm.
Where the immigrant community is a very strongly organized
right.
Labor constituency.
Okay.
So there's hope there.
Yeah. Okay, we've got Gilbert on line two. Are you there, Gilbert?
Yes, I am, Ron.
How you doing, buddy?
Good. First of all, I want to say you're doing a fantastic job. And my name is Gilbert Charles, and I'm also IBEW member from 716.
All right.
And, Ron, also what I wanted to say is we're not all immigrant workers, and, of course, I am an American citizen. What I want to say is also I was a newspaper boy when I first started. So, hey, man, I also praise your dad, because that's tough work.
Yeah, it is.
I also worked for Kroger's. Kroger's was also a union. And then from there, I moved on to the Machinist Union, IAM. I came across some good people. Les Schroeder, Gene Calvin. These guys were tough. They were business reps. What I want to say is just let's keep on going, moving forward. But as we move forward, let's go ahead and educate our people that we have organized, the people that we get on in. We have to just not only just get them in, but also let them know, educate them.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and there's a reason why we call each other brothers and sisters. It's because we're supposed to treat each other that way.
Mm-hmm.
And anytime you see your sibling, your blood relative, your blood brother or sister, lacks in some way, you teach them. And I tell you, I'll give you an example of my father, just because I've been thinking about him a lot lately.
Mm-hmm.
When I was a child, he bought us a set of encyclopedias. And, I'd have questions. I'd go to him with all kinds of questions. And he'd tell me, oh, I bought those encyclopedias, go look it up. But I don't know how to look it up. He says, well, bring me volume A through H and bring it to me. And then he showed me how to look it up. And then it got to the point where I didn't need him to show me. Because he taught me he didn't give me the answers. He showed me how to find the answers. And I think it's like giving somebody food or teaching them how to grow their own. And we need to do that a lot more in the labor movement, and which is a big reason why I like to push the George Meany Center and the organizing school, because we need to learn these things. We need to learn how to teach ourselves these things. And Morty, Carol, what have you got to add to that?
Well, I thought Gilbert was a plant that you did us. No, I mean, this is exactly why we're doing what we're doing. And the thing, education is so important and so powerful. They say knowledge is power. And so we all, to build a stronger union movement and a more just society, we all have to basically learn more and teach each other. And the whole purpose of the Southwest Organizing School is to try to make that happen. And, there's been the National Labor College in Washington for a long time, but what we've been trying to do is to bring those classes back home so that it's not so hard to go to Washington, but you can learn with brothers and sisters in Texas. Hopefully you'll come to New Mexico, you'll come to Colorado and Arizona, so that we build a Southwest network of union folks that are really learning with each other. And whenever in all of the classes that we teach, one of the most important things that we try to do is tell people to take it back home, not just to learn for yourself, but learn for everybody else in your union, because we have to learn more, because we have to be better than the bosses, or we aren't going to win the battles that we have to fight ahead of us.
Exactly, and we need to learn what tools are at our disposal.
Right.
That is so true. And Carol, are you there?
I'm here.
Carol, also, I got invited to Placid Harbor, Maryland, which also, that's where the IAM.
Right.
And that is fantastic, because also you have the United Auto Workers there, United Steel Workers there, and it's a joint venture. And that's what it's about. And it's about we all educate, we all get together, we all share ideas, and we need more of that.
Okay, we've got, thank you for your call, Gilbert. We've got Frank holding on line 3. Are you there, Frank?
Yes, I am. How are you doing this evening?
Oh, just fine. How are you?
Oh, fine. A couple of comments I'd like to make. First of all, some background. I'm a contractor, and I use undocumented workers every day. Minimum wage is irrelevant in this instance. The going rate nowadays for guys who can't do anything with very little skills is between 7 and 8. That's just the basic. You can't get anybody for less than 7 anymore. Another thing that kind of strikes me that you're not covering at all, and neither does the Chronicle cover this when it looks up about labor centers and all that, is all this business is a cash business. And I will swear that while I pay my taxes, 99% of these guys never pay a penny worth in taxes. They come to this country, they benefit from what this country can offer them, and they don't pay their fair share.
Well, the problem
is wrong, and the labor center should really somehow do something about that. Now, one other point I'd like to make, and then I'll let you say what you want to say. The other thing, too, is what I do with all of these guys is I write them a check, and I cash the check. But do you think the IRS is going to buy that from me? Uh-uh. So if the IRS ever audits me, man, I have a liability going out the kazoo. Okay, what do you got to say?
I would say that if you're paying $7 and $8 an hour, that might be the going rate for unskilled labor, but that doesn't ring true. There are a lot of people who are immigrants who are in vulnerable positions and who. In certain markets are paid less than minimum wage, and sometimes they're not paid their final check, and when they come around and ask for it, they might find that they're threatened with deportation. So the law provides that you're responsible to pay them and deduct the taxes and send the taxes in, and if you don't do that, you're violating the law. As you've indicated, you might be in some trouble. It's okay, we're not asking for your phone number. But you can't both exploit people and then complain when you're not paying the taxes that you're supposed to be paying on them and blame it on them. That's
right.
How they're not paying the taxes.
Which is what I was trying to get to.
The law provides that the taxes be withheld, and it's for their benefit and for your benefit, too. And if you're violating the law, then don't blame it on them.
Exactly. All right, we're going to go to Gene on line 1. We've got time for maybe one more caller. Gene, are you there?
Yeah, I'd like to tell you something about being on the outside of the organized movement and looking in. Now, I've been I work out here on the ship channel, and I worked as a pipe fitter for about almost 10 years, and now I'm an operator in a plant, and I've never been part of an organized group. But that's not from choice. And you know what I wish the union movement would do would be to have some outreach programs to where people could join in without even if the plant you worked in wasn't organized, because the way things are set up now, it's kind of a us versus them mentality of the union movement. I know when I was I worked as a contractor in a chemical plant when I was a pipe fitter, maintenance contractor, and I was just trying to make a living out there, we could. Huh?
I said, yeah, and I understand what you're saying, because I know it's been talked about in my unions and many of the other unions, is that non-union workers are not the enemy.
That's
they,
right.
They
you
are
know,
our allies.
Well, let me tell you, you know, they really treated us bad. And so we worked at a plant that was organized, you know, the operators and the people that were working for the plant. And they, you know, of course, we couldn't use their bathrooms. You know, we had to use the porta cans. And you come in there in a porta can, and somebody had snuck in there in the night and wrote, you know, F. Daniel Short for open wet back shop. You know, I mean, it didn't do anything to facilitate, you know, brotherhood or anything. And I just wish the unions would reach out, because I tell you what, the people that are not in a union, they wish they were. But, you know, you try and get organized or something, and these guys will fire you. And everybody knows it. Everybody knows how what the lengths of the extent that these companies will go to keep you from getting organized. And so, you know, it just needs, there needs to be some outreach stuff, maybe an intermediate step or something.
Well, and I know that's being talked about by a couple of unions is an affiliation kind of a thing,
right,
where, you know.
You know, we're all brothers out there, even if we can't, even if we don't have the opportunity, you know. A lot of it right now, if you want to get in a union, the perception at least is that, you know, you kind of have to have an uncle that's in there or something, you know, and, you know, it's not just, you can't just join up a union, in a union, you know, you just can't do it. It's not an opportunity that a lot of people have, and you still have to make a living. So
well,
I just wish the unions would do some kind of outreach. I'll let you go now. But I
okay, brother. We appreciate you calling.
Okay,
thank
bye.
You.
Yeah, and he does bring up a good point that, the unions are starting to change that mentality. It's not the country club that it used to be, at least the unions that I'm familiar with. We've finally come to the understanding that non-union workers are not the enemy. It's the willing to work for less.
Well, if
you know.
I don't have that the information with me, but it was one of our first shows that we did that I brought some statistics that have shown that throughout the country, If people had a choice to join a union, by far the majority of people would be willing to join a union. But it's kind of like what we've been discussing all along here. It's a difficulty of trying to get an election, trying to get that first contract, trying to get everybody to work together. It can be a very difficult thing, but a lot of people do support the union movement, both in and outside.
Also, you can't forget the role that employers have played in terms of hiring union-busting firms and frightening people either with deportation or losing their jobs, that understandably there's a tremendous amount of fear. And so the unions that have, are now trying to organize have tremendous hurdles. And one of the good things, the trend, is that more companies, at least, because of pressure, are now beginning to agree to some kind of neutrality during organizing campaigns or card check agreements. And that's certainly not, it's not the majority by any means, but at least we're moving in a direction where workers can really exercise a free choice to choose to be in a union without being afraid that they're going to lose their jobs.
All right. Well, I hate to say it, we're almost out of time. I'd like to thank you both, Morty Simon and Carol Oppenheimer of the Southwest Organizing Institute and the George Meany Center. I hope to have you on again. It really went by real fast.
It did.
It did, Ron.
And I'd like to thank you. And I don't know. Hopefully next time you're in town, we'll get you down here. Maybe in September we can get one or two of those instructors down here and just talk in the station.
I bet you could. That would be great. And again, I want to thank you for coming up with the idea. It was just about a year ago where it was your suggestion that we do a class about labor and the media. So I think you're going to enjoy the class, and I really appreciate your having given us that idea.
Thanks a lot. All right. Let's go into a wrap-up. Thank you, Carol. Morty, we'll talk to you next time.
Okay.
Okay. So what's up for next week, Tim?
Next week, my guest next week is going to be Fred Hirsch. He's a, I believe he's the president of the Plumbers and Fitters Local 393 in San Jose, California. He was part of a union delegation that spent 2 weeks in Columbia this past January, and he's going to be with us to talk about what he saw down there in Columbia, in particularly the conditions that these people are enduring down there. I don't know how many people know it, but right now this year alone there's been almost 200 people that have been murdered, union activists that have been murdered in Columbia for the in their struggle. So in also there was another seven in the Coca-Cola company down there of employees that were murdered because of their activism, union activism. So he will be with us next week, and then maybe a surprise guest.
Good deal. I'd also like to mention real quick, www.voicesatwork.net is the webpage that hopefully will be up by Monday. And I'm going to try and get a contest going for a logo. If you're any good, if we have any of the Geek Radio listeners out there that want to draft up a couple logos and send them in to ron@voicesatwork.net or tim@voicesatwork.net. If we pick your logo, we're going to give you a CD or a book or some kind of freebie. But send those in if you would. Right now we're going to go to final song, Seize the Day.
Open the gates and seize the day. Don't be afraid and don't delay. Nothing can break us. No one can make us give our rights away. Join the fray.
Listeners should be aware that the following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
Open the gates up. Hey, screw, did you miss me? Jimmy, I see that you found a new friend. Warden, come down here and kiss me hello, 'cause I'm back home in Huntsville again.
Radio station KPFT in Houston proudly presents The Prison Show on Friday nights between 9 and 11 o'clock. It talks about the biggest industry that eats up your tax dollars, Texas prisons. Ray Hill, Dewey, Marta, Ann, Patsy, and the whole gang will come to you each week to lift the spirits of those behind bars and announce the warnings to those not yet.